Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
I'm joined in the studio now by Pascal Donoghue, Finance Minister and Fine Gael TD for Dublin Central. Good morning to you. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning,
on
Claire.
The programme. I don't know how much you heard of our last conversation there
today
about giving a delayed dose of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. Which is preferable in your view, coming from your own perspective, of getting the economy reopened again? Should we all be half dosed or fully dosed before we can start moving ahead?
Well, the key thing is that we have an effective vaccination strategy in relation to the particular trade-off that you've identified there. This is what Ronan Glynn and his team are examining at the moment. As I said, effective vaccinations is the key thing within our country. We're on track to do that. Our vaccination strategy is working. We vaccinated 140,000 of our citizens last week. It'll be 170,000 at least this week. So what I want is scale. That is now happening. It will build. And I look forward to Ronan and his team and Breen McGrath advising government on this decision, I hope later on in the week.
But you'll get much greater scale if everyone gets one dose and then we have a significant delay before we get the second dose. And Professor Linda Ball there saying the UK experience is that people are up to 80% protected on the first dose.
Indeed. And we have evidence now from what is happening in the UK, in Israel and America in relation to the aftermath of receiving the first dose. However, as your interview also indicated there, there are questions in relation to the duration of the vaccination dividend. And there's also questions we have to tease out then regarding what impact this will have and how long we have to run our vaccination programme for across the coming months. So there is undoubtedly some important benefits of a single dose, but there are also consequences of it. And this is what Ronan and Breen will be looking at during the week. But overall, as I said last week, 140,000 people vaccinated. Thursday and Friday were single busiest days of vaccination. That's the scale we want and I want, and that's what's happening.
Okay. And when are you expecting to get the advice on this?
I know it's been considered at the moment, and I would anticipate at this point it'll probably be towards the end of the week.
But does there come a time where there has to be an economic push here on this? That you can't just wait for NIAC to issue their advice? That you have to say, we have to start getting the country reopen again, and if we can get people 80% protected, let's do it.
I, of course, am so deeply aware of what that trade-off is. I also remember what it was like to be in this studio in other weeks and other months, where our battle against this disease was not going well, where we had so many people in our hospitals with so many cases of community transmission developing every day, at one point up to 6,000 to 7,000. At this point in the disease, the critical thing now is to complete our vaccination efforts. And that will lay the foundation for getting our country back to work and reopening our economy. And it's the interplay between all of this now that the government is going to consider. But that which we said we would reopen in the months of March and April were reopened. The targets we had for vaccination across those different points have been delivered. And for me, for the weeks and months to come ahead, we just have to deliver our vaccination targets, and that will set the foundation for our economy becoming open again.
I see Pfizer is saying that the licence approval by regulators for the interval between its COVID-19 vaccine doses is 21 days. So I assume they're reminding us of that before we make a decision to go against the manufacturer's stated interval. That's just coming into us here. Would we do that?
But this is exactly the reason why I've mentioned them on two occasions already. We already have our public health experts in place evaluating this. It's not up to me to decide on the veracity of a manufacturer's claim. And even in the interview earlier on, you heard your two experts there tease out the different issues that are involved in this decision. So we will conclude through our public health doctors a deliberation on this matter, I hope, during the week. And then that will allow us to continue with the strong progress that we're making in vaccinations.
What was Stephen Donnelly at the weekend when he said that we should prioritise those aged between 18 to 30 for vaccination?
Well, Stephen was asking a question about our vaccination
strategy.
But
he already had the answer when he was asking the question. That's what he seemed to say yesterday.
But what every minister does when they're in a situation of conducting something that's so vital to the public and economic health of our country is they're always teasing out different scenarios, challenging our assumptions. The matter is now dealt with. He asked a question. He received the advice back. The government confirmed on Saturday that we are sticking with our current vaccination approach.
Were you privately enraged? Were you one of those ministers who was privately enraged?
I wasn't. I read about it on Saturday. And to me, what was important is the government reached and issued a full, clear message on the potential decision during the day. And that's what happened. There's nobody who knows better than Stephen the importance of delivering a successful vaccination programme. And it's in that spirit he was asking that question. Equally, the matter was concluded on Saturday.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I suppose you know that how careful you have to be with communications around this. That didn't seem careful.
I know the value of careful communication in many of these things, but I also know the value of always asking questions and probing to see if we are doing the right thing. Like so many of your listeners at the moment, if not all of them, are so worn out over how long this has taken, over the cost on lives and livelihoods. But at the same time, we are so close now to completing this journey and beating this disease. And Stephen, like any of us, is always asking, what can he do to bring that moment of success closer?
OK, we were talking earlier as well about this Indian variant, and Linda Bald, the professor we were talking to in the UK, suggesting that, you know, they perhaps need to look there at restricting travel from India as a result. Should we do that here? And should we look at restricting travel from Britain? Can we do that?
Any decision in relation to restricting travel from the United Kingdom would just have really huge consequences in terms of obviously movement of people between the two islands, and would also raise really big questions for capacity for us and also for the common travel area. So
it couldn't be done?
Well, things can always be done. Decisions can always be made. But every decision has really, really significant consequences. And our experience of mandatory hotel quarantine over in recent weeks alone demonstrate that the consequences of those decisions happen very, very, very quickly. So what we'll look to is we look to see, firstly, you know, what is happening with the potential incidence of this new variant, if it is in Ireland at all. And secondly, we'll obviously be looking at what our colleagues in the United Kingdom do in relation to this. And you can see the speed with which they're now evaluating this potential development.
Mm-hmm. But if someone came to you and said, look, we need to restrict travel from Britain, we have to do it. This variant is all over the place. It's dangerous. It's a variant of concern. What would be your initial response to that?
Well, we've already significantly reduced travel from the United Kingdom to Ireland. Massive reductions in travel between the two countries have already been made. And we have an array of tests that are in place at the moment, even before we get to mandatory hotel quarantine, that apply to travel from the United Kingdom. I'd say two things. Firstly, I'd be making a reminding everybody that only absolutely essential travel is allowed in the first place. And then secondly, if the case is made for restricting or eliminating travel, I'd be asking two questions. Firstly, what does that mean with our relationship with Northern Ireland and the importance of having free movement across the border? And secondly, how or could we have the capacity in place to actually manage the mandatory hotel quarantine consequences of this?
OK, I've asked you before how we pay for everything that we've spent on COVID so far. And when I ask you about that, I feel as though you offer words of comfort. But I see at the weekend, there's much more being suggested and said now about how you might get out of this mess that we're ultimately going to be in when it comes to our deficit. I'm sure you read Gerard Howland writing in the Sunday Times saying that you'll never say you're going to increase taxes, but if you leave the rates and credits as they are, and you'll catch more people in the tax net, up to 600 million euro extra will come in by virtue of doing that. Is that the plan, or is there something more going to happen?
Well, I think we should take a step back and look at what I've said in the past. I have offered a degree of assurance about our ability to manage this. Because the level of increased debt that we are going to hold, that will go up to 238 billion euro by the end of this year, is a significant increase in debt, but is in line with what other countries are experiencing at the moment. And secondly, our economy went into this pandemic in very, very good economic condition. That's going to help us get out of this. But there are going to be decisions that will need to be made. Our stability programme update that we published last week showed the ability of our national finances to move back to a position of broad balance between 2024 and 2025. but it's still going to require sensible decisions in relation to how we spend money. And it will still require, for example, when we get out of this health emergency, gradually reducing the expenditure measures that we have in place that are dealing with an emergency. Mm,
but it'll go beyond that. It'll go beyond pulling back what we're spending now on COVID. As you say, sensible decisions will have to be made. I'm just wondering, where's the money going to come from?
Well, again, if you look at the economic forecasts that we published last week, they indicate that by getting our country back to work alone, that is going to be a huge driver of tax revenue increases in the future. We want to get and believe we can get around 70,000 people back to work this year, around 220,000 people back to work next year. That will be the key driver of closing the gap between what we spend and what we tax. And in every budget that I've done, Claire, there has always been changes in taxes that we have made that have made and delivered higher levels of tax revenue. So those decisions will still be there. But there was great value in having national finances that were in balance, a low level of private sector credit within our economy, and many different sources of employment before we got into the pandemic. And they're going to be a huge help now in getting Ireland through this.
Will we have to reduce spending on public services?
If you look at the figures that we have published in relation to this, the level of expenditure that we have that relates to the pandemic, we do plan that when the pandemic reduces here in Ireland, and then when we contain the pandemic, we will be reducing and then eliminating that spending by the end of next year.
But beyond that, beyond the spend on COVID?
We're planning to increase spending in public services by, in current spending terms, by around 3 to 3.5% per year, which is a rate of current spending growth that is in line with how we expect the economy to grow as well.
So getting people back to work, that's about it, is it, in terms of balancing the books?
It's much of it, and it is a huge project. We have over 400,000 people on the pandemic unemployment payment. To say that's it, I think could understate how important it is to the lives of people and how big a project it's going to be. But when we do it, and I believe we will, it will be the single biggest driver of how we get our economy growing again and close the gap between spending and taxation. But it's still the case that budget by budget by budget, there will still be decisions that will need to be made, that won't be easy, that will need to be defended, that will also play the final part in the jigsaw in closing this gap.
And will you need to increase the universal social charge or PRSI this coming budget?
I'm not planning to make any such changes in the approaching budget. Mm. The approaching budget will all be about, for next year, getting 225,000 people back to work in our country. And that will be the sole focus of the budget.
The Green Party Junior Minister, Joe O'Brien, he called last week for this one-off solidarity tax on high earners and highly profitable companies. I think you knocked that back fairly quickly, did you? You said he had to make any such proposal through official channels and you weren't planning to tax companies beyond where they were being taxed at the moment. Is that what you said?
Well, what I actually said is there's a process underway in relation to this through an international organisation called the OECD that is all about the taxation of big companies. And with the prerogative that we have of our country continuing to be competitive and retaining large amounts of employment from large companies, I said to Joe that was the best way in which that proposal could be advanced or examined.
Okay. Is there merit in what he said?
There's merit overall in two things. How we can deliver an enhanced sense of fairness in relation to taxation as we exit from this pandemic, and also how we can ensure that all are making a contribution to our recovery according to their means. So there's a definite case in that. But there's always a balance that we need to strike, because the balance that we need to strike on the other side of the ledger, so to speak, is the need for Ireland to be competitive and to be conscious that many of the jobs that we have here, particularly in international trading sectors, are jobs that other countries would be happy to have.
Yeah.
And that's the balance that we have to manage.
I did read somewhere that that may have been a political move by the Greens to distance themselves from any sort of moves that you might make on the tax front.
Well, you can read much speculation about the relations between government partners.
That's right.
And speculation about
pretty
me.
Clever move. You know, we wanted to tax higher earners and we wanted to tax corporates in, you know, in a way that would bring in more money to the state. And you're saying, well, you know, we can't do that. And he can say afterwards, look what I said.
But each year, for the years ahead, we are planning to collect more corporate tax revenue from very large companies. So if you look over recent years, the amount of corporate tax revenue that we have collected has increased year on year, despite the changes that are going to happen with regard to international mm-hmm. tax. I expect that revenue to continue to increase across the next few years.
Yeah,
but keeping the balance also between protecting jobs and revenue that we have.
You say that, and then we see the figures from Google. I mean, they are just getting a free ride here, aren't they?
But look at the... Well, firstly, I'm never...
$63 billion they took out of here in 2019. How much did they give us?
I'm never in a position, nor do I ever, comment on the tax affairs of any taxpayer in our country, whether they're a company or a person. In fairness to the particular item and the particular story that was run, I did acknowledge this was across 2019. And generally, mm-hmm. I'll make three points in relation to where we are now. And these are three general points. Firstly, the so-called double Irish agreement is now gone. Secondly, the international rules in relation to moving income to zero tax regimes and countries, that's changed as well. And thirdly, the tax reforms of the last American administration are having a very, very big impact now on how tax is collected from big companies.
So that won't happen again?
Generally, and as I said, I can't comment on any individual company, nor would I, but those kind of scenarios are far more difficult to repeat at the moment.
OK, is Joe Biden coming for our American multinationals?
The American tax proposals that were published could have a very meaningful effect and significant effect on how we conduct corporate tax policy here in Ireland. He's not coming for anybody. He's not coming for Ireland, but he is looking to change.
I mean, his Treasury Department saying we're a big tax haven.
However, what they are looking to do is they are looking to change the way in which their big companies are taxed. I've been saying this moment has been coming for years. It's now happening, and that will have consequences for Ireland.
So anything they're losing out on is their fault, not ours. Is that what you're saying?
We've been in a situation, actually, where there has been a gap between the tax policies of many, many, many different countries. Let's say America and then other countries in which some of their large companies are located. They're now closing that gap. And as they close that gap, it has the potential to have a very big impact on where tax revenue is collected.
And how do you respond to that accusation that we're a big tax haven?
I would respond to such claims by having a look at the facts in relation to Ireland, that while we do have a low corporate tax rate of 12.5%, the difference between that rate and the tax that is actually collected here in Ireland is very, very low.
Are you not insulted by it, though, on behalf of the state? Do you not feel that it is... For America to say that to, I would see ourselves as an important trading partner and friend of America. It's a pretty awful thing for them to say.
Well, I had the opportunity to speak to Secretary Yellen there, Janet Yellen, who's the American Treasury Secretary there a few weeks ago. And for years, I've been making the case that Ireland has made a huge amount of change in our corporate tax policy that we rarely get the recognition or credit for. The issue that you and I just touched on a moment ago, the fact that things like the double Irish agreement are now gone, the fact that things like stateless companies are now eliminated mm-hmm. from our tax code. We never guess. The only people who will make the story for Ireland about that is us. And that's our job. It's my job. It's what I do every day.
You've spoken about KBC when the news emerged late last week that they were on the way out. But do we accept now that it's just too hard for these international banks to make money here, that we have a problem?
International banks can make more money in other countries and in particular other bigger markets than they can here in Ireland. I said this at the moment in which NatWest decided to withdraw Ulster Bank from Ireland. The KBC withdrawal confirms that.
So
again,
do we need to fix that? Does the central bank need to fix that now?
Well, I'd go back actually indeed to the discussion that we had about public health policy earlier on when we were talking about vaccination strategies. And I made the case to you then that every decision always has other consequences. Because if you look at where we are now here in Ireland, yes, we have fewer banks. Yes, it is the case that for international banks to be present here in Ireland, it means they get less of a return than they do elsewhere. But on the other hand, we are now, I hope, in the latter phases of beating COVID-19. And we have seen the capital levels that our banks hold, been a vital factor in supporting our economy in moving through this phase of the pandemic. So even if it is the case that the cost of doing business here is higher in Ireland than it is in other markets, on the other hand, we do have a very secure and stable banking system at the moment. I support the central bank. I support the central bank in the decisions they make. But there are trade-offs here and balances that we always have to be aware of.
So having these guys leave, the international players leave, you think it's worth it?
I didn't say that, Claire.
For stability.
But again, you just said to me, I said...
But you're saying the rules are the rules.
You alleged to me there, Claire,
that the rules are forcing these guys out.
What I simply said is there's balance in relation to this. There's trade-offs between the risk that our economy faces and the stability of our rules. And we are seeing that balance move in a way that I would not like to have seen happened, but it has happened. Now what I need to do is look to the future. We've many banks... new banks here in Ireland that are providing financial services in a new way. We need to see what we can do to foster an enhanced competitive dynamic here in Ireland than would otherwise be the case.
Okay, the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, it was reported over the weekend that he was questioned on the 9th of April about the by the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation over the leaking of this confidential copy of the GP deal. Now, we know the Garda investigation is happening. That's fine. Let that play out. Let's see what happens. But do you loathe the optics of your party leader and the Taoiseach being in this situation?
I feel the same way the Taoiseach does about it. The Taoiseach really regrets this has happened. He acknowledged he made a mistake. He acknowledges the effect that it has on the perception of our party. We acknowledge all of that. And when Leo acknowledged that he'd made this mistake, he went into the Dáil and owned up to us and gave his perspective on why it had happened and why he made the decision. Of course, none of us wish, including Leo, that this was happening. But on the other hand, I've worked with Leo Varadkar so closely now for so many years. He is a man of the highest standards. He made a mistake. And I look at all of the decisions he's got right. I look at all of the decisions he's tried to get right. And why we all regret this wasn't that this is happening, it is against the career of somebody who's trying to do the best thing for our country. And I have seen that on so many occasions from Leo.
You may accept his bona fides and you may say he made a mistake and all of that. But the guard that you're holding your leader's phone, it just looks awful.
And what we have to let do now is what we would let happen with regard to any citizen, which is we have to allow the Gardaí to conclude their process in relation to this, which is what they're going to do.
Okay.
They've interviewed him. They'll reach a view in relation to the matter, which, of course, we will respect. But as I said, I assess this particular behaviour from Leo against the context of all of the other behaviour I've seen from him for many, many years.
Minister, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Claire.
We have reports just in that Jose Mourinho has been sacked as Tottenham Hotspur manager. We'll have more on that later on in the programme.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.